felt like in that moment you thought, I belong with this guy and I can take it out? Did you have a moment at this point?
Oh, man. I'm just trying to play my game. LeBron is the best player, top five player of all time. To be in the court with him and just going against him, it feels good. For where I started, I was playing, my coaches say, lunch ball when I was 17.
Lunch ball,
that's what they say.
Lunch ball.
Yes, so being here, playing with my teammate and playing against a team like the Cavs, they're a great team. It feels good.
Hey, Almighty Ballin' listeners, I'm here today with Jonathan Charks of The Ringer. Jonathan, thanks so much for sitting down and talking about Giannis, Harden, and everyone in between.
Yeah, no problem, man.
So, Jonathan and I have shared roots. We've talked about and discussed. Apparently, we're both from Dallas, we both moved to Austin, and we both know everything about basketball.
Well, I don't know about everything, but I do what I can.
I think combined, I mean, you're the 90% out of the... I'm the 10%, right?
Well, it's always good to be humble.
Right. Actually, maybe it's not. I think we might have learned from Giannis the other day when he took it right at LeBron that maybe it's not best to be humble. Maybe it's best to say, okay, I'm going to pick the biggest dog in the fight and just kick his butt, which I think is kind of what Giannis did.
Well, when you're on the court, you let your game do your talking for you. So that's a little different.
Yeah. So you had this article... And it was, the Bucks are reliably interesting, but when will they be consistently good? I don't know if that question has been answered yet, but I think that they clearly have a elite building block. So the first thing I was going to ask you is a question that I think that a lot of people thought was easier to answer 20 games ago, even before the season started. If you were starting a franchise, would you rather have Karl-Anthony Towns or Giannis?
Oh, that's a good one, man. You know what? What I wonder, they made Giannis a point guard.
Yeah.
What if they just made Karl Towns a point guard?
That's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. And I've thought about what the episode is going to be called. I think it might be Point Giannis, Point Harden, : What's the point? Because
there you go.
I like cheesy titles, but. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be just sort of scoping out the NBA for young guys who might have primary ball handling duties. But I think I would go with Giannis, honestly. I think that increasingly there's so much made about this. Oh, man, Karl-Anthony Towns, the new center paradigm. Kristaps Porzingis, he shoots threes and he's 7'3". Look, that's amazing. And they're both going to be stellar players. But it's... starting to happen now, whereas the Giannis thing hasn't really started to happen. I mean, he can't shoot threes, but I mean, Kristaps is never going to be point Kristaps, right? There's not really 7-footers who are primary distributors, and that's something that is truly unique, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm all about that point center hybrid thing that LeBron started. I guess Draymond has a little bit too. I do think that's kind of the way the sport is moving, just to funnel everything through your biggest player, then have him playing center too, and the lineups off of that. Yeah, and Towns is more in a little bit more of a box in terms of what he's doing with his coaching staff and the players around him. But I don't see why Towns couldn't theoretically be given the ball and run point all the time. He's got the skills to do it. He's a really good ball handler and passer for his size. He's very fluid. He has a great feel for the game. I could easily see him. I'm a Karl Towns truther. I was big on him. To go real hipster on you, I was big on him back in the 2013 Hoops, something. He was 16, playing with Wiggins and Exum.
Wow.
I feel like Towns can do everything on the court that needs to be done on a basketball court. Like a guy on his size, he could run point and play center. Giannis maybe can too.
Yeah, well,
but it's just like Giannis is a more kind of outside the box coach.
I think Giannis has played center in some rotations. And I mean,
yes,
I did my Milwaukee preseason podcast with Frank Madden, and that's one of the main things that I sometimes have guests on, and I have an idea stuck in my head, and I keep bringing it up, even though they clearly don't want to talk about it. And that was probably the subject for the podcast, is me being like, what about Giannis playing center? And there have been some really productive minutes with Giannis playing center for the Bucks so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Right.
If not going to post, if they're not going to post up centers anymore, there's not a huge need to have a big bulky guy down there in a lot of possessions. So why not just have four shooters around him and just run constantly?
Right.
That feels like the way things are going.
Yeah, no, and I feel like Henson, you know, doesn't really have the length to be the type of shot blocker that they would need on help defense. So, I mean, you, the first person who you talked about was LeBron James as the originator of this sort of skill set. And I'm inclined to agree with you because, I mean, I really think this final showed off really well how, okay, on defense, I'm going to be the center, who's the pivot point of the defense. And then on offense, I'm going to run the point, which is the pivot point of the offense. And if you have your, it's like, if you have a 7-footer, right, who's running your defense, and then he's also your point guard who's running your offense, then you just have your best player with, you know, it's like finger on the pulse of whatever's happening on the court. And I think that, you know, that's a lot easier in terms of team construction than having the best center in the league and the best point guard in the league.
Yeah, I mean, just as you were talking about that, all I could think was like, there's one, so maybe like the next big thing is to have two of these guys playing together.
Oh, God.
Like 2 point centers, and that'll be like the next great dynasty to have two of these guys. So one has defense, one has offense, and they kind of play off each other. Or you have one in the whole game. Like I was looking at like the other day, I was looking at like with not quite point centers, but they almost had Embiid and Porzingis on the same team in Philadelphia.
Oh, God.
So you have all these like transcendent players, like put two of them together. And that might be like the post-Warriors kind of dynasty.
Okay, so first, you've inadvertently predicted a lot of the stuff that we were going to talk about. I had written down in my notes, is playing without a point guard distributor maybe the way to solve the Timberwolves' woes? Because, you know, running through Karl-Anthony Towns and a little bit through Wiggins. And then I also had, it makes me wonder how crazy it would be if the 76ers had Chris Stapps and he was the ball handler in pick and rolls with Embiid, because that was my thought. Exactly. You know, I think that the crucial thing behind the idea of having a ball handler, who's out of position offensively. So having James Harden defending wings and then running the point, or having Giannis defending bigs and running the point, is that you're just throwing something weird at the team that they're not used to. And you talked about that a lot in terms of how the Rockets could use that and play him alongside Eric Gordon in your article, James Harden is the changing face of the point guard position. But it's just like the focal idea is throwing things at defenders that they're not used to, at least offensively, I think, right? Am I off in that regard?
No, I mean, I think that's probably pretty fair. And it's just, it's always like you're just trying to find the next thing, like move one step ahead. Like, that's what I thought, like, the whole point of the process was to get two of those kind of players together. Like, that's what would justify all the losing they did. Was if you had, like, a Towns Embiid front court or an Embiid Porzingis front court or something like that. Like, 2 7-footers you can play inside and out, handle the ball, and shoot threes.
Is Simmons Embiid that?
I got to see it. I mean, how long is he out the rest of the season?
No, he's going to come back. So he was injured 2 weeks before the season started, and it was supposed to be reevaluated at 6 weeks.
Okay. I will say this, like, I think Jahlil and Nerlens and Saric all have talent, but they got to go.
Yeah.
Simmons, Embiid, and shooters. Like, come on.
Yeah. No, that's pretty much exactly where I'm at. And I think that there's a lot of potential to the whole Embiid-Simmons thing, because I think that, you know, you're ratcheting it up another notch with the whole mismatch thing and just throwing things at centers that they're not used to. It's like, can you imagine, say, a league average starting center, can you imagine Miles Plumlee and Aminu trying to deal with a pick set by Embiid, and Simmons is coming off of it, and then Embiid pops. Like, what does Miles Plumlee do? I think he craps in his pants on the basketball court.
I guess you mean Mason. Are you talking about, like, the Blazers Plumlee?
Yeah, did I say
Mason?
Is that Mason? Whatever, man. It's Plumlee.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. They're all the same. Well, not really, but I know what you mean.
Yeah,
like, it feels like the league average center is going to have to change really, really fast. You can see it happening already this season with all these guys shooting threes.
Right.
But, like, the league average center, it's kind of like the league average power forward 4 or 5 years ago. It feels like they're on the chopping block right now.
Hey, we grew up in Dallas. Because Dirk, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we both got to see Dirk, you know, sort of change up the position. And, I mean, Kristaps Porzingis is one of the guys. I mean, the fact that, you know, the fact that the whole league was sort of waiting for Kristaps Porzingis to sort of take the mantle as the recognized best player on the Knicks, and that probably half of Knicks fans would say right now that, yeah, that's what he is right now, is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, you just want to get him as many possessions as possible because he's the most interesting player on that team.
Well, yeah.
And they're not very good, so what's the difference?
Yeah, and it's like, so the best player on your team is a three-point shooting center. And so the best player on the Knicks, which is, you know, supposed to be the mecca of basketball, I guess, is like a 7'3" sniper. And that's just sort of, you know, a really weird thing to have happened. But I think, you know, specifically the way to optimize the idea of playing point guard out of position, right? So, you know, guarding wings defensively or bigs defensively and then running the point. I think the best way to build alongside that is having a three-point shooting center. So I think the Simmons-Embiid pairing is going to be great because really you're screwing up the center, the primary rim protector on the other team. You're just messing with his head if the center can either pop or roll. I just think that that's the way to make it most like, oh God, what do I do in this position? And then you can start your pick and rolls either, you know, from right inside the key, or you can start your pick and rolls from the high key and it still works as long as you're going downhill. I mean, that's my thinking anyways.
Yeah, I mean, the stretch five thing, it really puts – it's almost impossible to guard with a normal rim protector on the three-point line. And I think, too, with like a Simmons and Embiid, then you have like three wings around them.
Right.
And then you really try to attack smaller guards. Like, it kind of feels like the league is – it's becoming a little like homogenized in the sense that like a really tall, slow guy or a really small, fast guy, they can both be exploited in these newer kind of lineups. So, like, your 6'1 point guard, if I got Simmons and Embiid and 3 6'7 guys, I'm just trying to butcher him in the post if I can, or hit him on the boards, or get him switching screens. And there isn't going to be that much he can do. And then on defense, I have a ton of length on him. So it's like, I feel you'll see more and more lineups across the league where just those like lineup of deaths, basically.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say, like, in 10 years, maybe that's your starting lineup league-wide, is a lineup of death.
Yeah, yeah, where I mean, we all say positionless, right? But, I mean, it might go actually pure positionless. Like, it might – there might not be any positions.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like eventually it's going to be all like – it's like the – is the end point like 5, 6, 8 guys? Or is it like a 7-foot guy? And it's – yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
Yeah, I think the end point is the Harlem Globetrotters, except it's not an exhibition. It's actually happening.
You got anything more? What do you mean with the Globetrotters? I don't
just like really them. Like weird stuff, and they're all in a row, like all dribbling the ball and all doing weird ball handling stuff. And
oh, so like 5 basketballs on the court at the same time,
right? Yeah,
it's really get real funky with it.
Yeah. that's one thing we haven't quite touched on with this whole thing is that one of the reasons why it's great to have a ball handler who's playing out of position is defensively, you can do things like play Eric Gordon and then James Harden. If James Harden is your smallest player, if he's marginally the point guard, then you can run a really big lineup that doesn't necessarily need to be clunky. I don't think the Rockets have the personnel to make this work, but I mean, you could just play like a shooting guard, like a different guy alongside Harden. And now, I mean, a guy like Ty Lawson is sort of totally played out of the game. Well, he's bad, but I mean, Chris Paul would struggle against that, I think.
I think that's like a super part of the appeal is the tall ball handler, what it does for the defense and how you can set your lineups. Like that, you look at the draft now. All the point guards in the draft last few years have all been really tall, like ball handlers, like 6'4", 6'5", and that's the case this year too, with like Fultz and Lonzo Ball, Markelle Fultz. There's actually an article I'm doing tomorrow, so kind of stepping on that a bit. But just the idea, as like if bigger players are moving, it's like chicken or the egg. Are bigger players becoming point guards, or are point guards becoming bigger players? It's kind of the same thing, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes some sense. It makes some sense, like, in terms of, some of the elite quarterbacks just in the NFL being really tall, you know, but also being really athletic, just sort of diversifying a skill set so that, you know, there's more that you can do, right?
Yeah, that's a good comparison. I like that.
Yeah, well, it's just, like, making things a lot more complex. And I just think that so much of the game, especially James Harden's game. So, I mean, James is one of the more interesting ones. So much of James Harden's game is psychological, and he seems like he's evaluating, you know, literally what his defender is looking at. So if his defender, like, turns his head just a little bit, that's when James Harden pump fakes a lot of the time, right? And having James Harden be able to run that and have 15 different options based on a defensive miscue is really horrifying, I think, to have to deal with.
Yeah, he's really, like, I thought he'd be better under D'Antoni's system, but I can't say anticipated numbers this big right away. I mean, he's been awesome.
Yeah, I kind of thought that was going to happen. I'm a big D'Antoni truther, to borrow your terminology. But do you think that there are any big men or wings right now who are being sort of crafted into this type of role? So the guy who I wanted to start with is Winslow on the Heat. I think that the Heat are realizing really quickly that he can't shoot and that he needs to have the ball in his hand if he's going to be out there. So, yeah, first, do you think that's going to be successful? Do you see that working? And then who are some other guys you think the teams might ultimately try to, go the other way with it rather than having a tall point guard, you know, go from the chicken to the egg rather than from the egg to the chicken?
Well, once again, I'll step on an article I'm working on now. Brandon Ingram, the Lakers.
Okay.
They're going to bring the ball up sometime in that second unit, and they have them with, like, Lou Williams and Clarkson, and both those guys are just kind of gunners. They just want to shoot the ball. And I think Ingram has got the passing ability and the dribbling ability to at least be a part-time, full-time ball handler. That's a guy that's 7'4" wingspan, or I think that's how tall, long his arms are. And he's so skinny, it's hard to play him with the 4 or the 5 right now. So you might as well flip it the other way, play him at the 1. I think any tall wing, to get the most out of his game, you kind of have to see if he can run point sometimes. So, like, all those guys in the last few drafts, Hezonja, Stanley Johnson, both those guys have struggled a lot this season. Can those guys initiate offense? And that's going to be a huge part of unlocking their games. Winslow for sure. The guy he reminded me of coming out of college was Iguodala. I thought that was probably his ceiling. And Iguodala's kind of been a long-time point-forward type, especially with that jump shot.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, you know, you touch on something that I think is also a key matchup in terms of team construction when you have one of these ball handling wings. So we talked a bit about, like, having a five pick and pop option to go along with a ball handling wing. I think another guy who really works with that is someone like, of course, Steph Curry, right? But just like the Jordan Clarkson type, or, the Who's that? Who's that guy who just got that huge contract offer from the Nets? Who's on the Miami Heat? Tyler Johnson?
Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or like Tyler Johnson, right? I think that that's another thing that offensively off the bench makes a lot of sense. Or, I mean, if you're Steph Curry, you start because you're amazing. But it's like if you have a really quick guy who can switch it off with you in terms of ball handling duties, then you're just basically like cutting the court up the middle and deciding whether or not you're going to run classical plays or just weird, screwed up, okay, we're going to go through Draymond Green type of plays.
Well, the guy, as you were talking about, the guy I was thinking of was Patty Mills for the Spurs.
Yeah.
And like when they had Manu in the second unit, and that opens the point guard slot. Just give me a pure three-point shooting specialist.
Right.
Like I want – if I'm playing a 6'2 guy, I want a guy who's just never going to miss threes and who can dribble into threes and can score a lot of points really quickly. And that's, I think, in terms of their backup point guard slot, as more wings move to the ball handling role, then your smallest players, those pure shooters come into play. Like give me a guy who can just get 20 points in 6 minutes. And that might be how you stick on the league, even if you can't guard anybody.
Yeah, I wish I had been more confident in this, but I was suspicious whether or not Cannon on the Bulls was going to be a good fit and whether or not he was going to sort of solidify himself as a guy who has a reason to be in the NBA. And I think he's done that just because if you have other guys dictating your offense, then just, I mean, there's no one worse than Rondo. I mean, really. And there's offensively no one better than Cannon, who's just like, okay, I have the ball in my hand. I'm not going to like dribble it around and just pound the rock. I'm just going to let it fly.
Yeah, especially with Wade and Butler. Those are two like classic examples of like your ball handling wings who initiate the offense. You don't really need a third non-shooter out there who can't, who just create shots for other people because Jimmy and Wade can go already. So yeah, Cannon's a perfect example of like your 6'1" shooting guard, basically.
Yeah,
just come in, get a lot of threes up really fast.
And so, another guy who you wrote an article about. Are you as optimistic about Trey Lyles as I am? Because I think that Trey Lyles, Rudy Gobert might be the best player, but that's just because he might be Defensive Player of the Year perennially. But I think offensively, he has the highest ceiling out of any of the players on the Jazz.
That's interesting. I'm a big Trey Lyles fan. I've always liked his game. Dante Exum's kind of breaking my heart right now, but I've always thought like Lyles, Exum, and Hood, that was like your hipsters, Jazz core, those three guys. I mean, I think Lyles is a great – I mean, I think he's got all the world amount of talent in that body. Like his size, his ability to handle the ball, his feel – and that three-point shot can be consistent. I think he's got – I think long-term he'll be the starting four in Utah. Eventually, they'll have to go to that kind of more wide-open offensive look, I think.
Oh, yeah. I agree. And Derek Favors just seems injury-prone. And the fact that he hasn't gotten an extension yet is just – raises some eyebrows with me. You know what I mean?
Like Favors, he'll get a max somewhere.
Yeah, Utah's yeah. I'm not sure his best fit is going to be – in Utah. And you know, part of the reason is because I think that especially if you have a guy who Gobert is sort of one of the guys who we talked about as if this totally takes over, he wouldn't be in the league. You know, I mean that would never really probably happen. I don't see the pendulum swinging that far. But he offensively, you know, would sort of struggle to be in the league if there were five Giannis's on the other team. So I think that Trey Lyles, you know, you need a guy like that on opposite him. So he just sort of makes the most sense.
And to circle it back a bit with like guys like Gobert, if he gets into a playoff series with Portland or Golden State, they're gonna run the 1-5 pick and roll, and then Dame and Steph are just gonna dribble up. And if he isn't up on that screen, they're gonna shoot a three in his face every time.
Man, that was the go ahead.
What were you saying?
Oh, that was the first matchup of the season, or like day one, the Blazers played the Jazz, right? And that's what they were doing.
Yeah, I was like, oh, Rudy's not coming up. I'm just going to shoot the three.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's how the game has really changed. Like, it used to be like your rim protecting five. Well, now it's like, these guys can dribble into threes. And if they can get out and guard them, Like, you can play him off the floor in a playoff series doing that.
Jonathan, here's what you need to be watching, because this is what I've been watching. And the last couple of games, I haven't been entirely impressed. So whether or not the Clippers are a real contender is going to be entirely on whether or not DeAndre can defend players out on the three-point line. Because if DeAndre can do that, then I believe in the Clippers as a team that could potentially beat the Warriors. But otherwise, like, that's, I don't think it's going to happen.
He doesn't want to do it, but like theoretically, he should. It seems like he possibly could.
I mean, athletically, he 100% could, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's got the speed. It's just getting in a stance, and so, like, it's so contrary to his instincts. But theoretically, yes, he should be able to switch that. If not, they have to go Blake at the five, I guess.
But
and then play, like, I don't know, Luke at the four. They're short of wing, it seems like.
Yeah.
For a Warriors series.
I just think the reason why that DeAndre thing to me is like whether or not the Clippers can contend, why that's the hot button issue is because Luke, I think, in any given series, you can expect him to hit or you could predict that he would hit 40% of his corner threes. You know, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be stunned if it did. You know what I mean?
Well, he'll get wide open looks until he proves he can make it from two games straight.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, you know, if you're saying, well, okay, I'm not confident that he's going to hit them. You know, I think, like, if they lose because of Luke, right, it's because, you know, make or miss league, sort of like a Harrison Barnes last year in the finals type of thing. But if they lose because of DeAndre, it'll be because strategically he just kept getting burnt when he had to go defend people at the three-point line.
But here's the thing, like, so say DeAndre switches that, then the other way, can Chris and JJ hold up on Draymond, or not on Durant, obviously, but on Draymond? And that's why I think the Clippers always kind of struggle against the Warriors, because Chris is about 6 foot, JJ is 6'4", and Golden State is so much bigger on the perimeter than those two guys. Like, Klay just eats up Redick most of the time, because Klay's got a solid 3 inches, and then it's just money. And Steph can raise up for Chris Paul just as easily, too. So that's the other part of the question for the Clippers is, can those guards hold up in the Warriors series?
Well, so the reason why I have a little bit of optimism, and we're totally off topic, but I'm just happy to be talking to you. So, you know, it's good that I'm getting your opinion on other stuff. So the reason why I think that the Clippers could do that is because help defense wise, Blake Griffin looks like he's legit this year, and Luke Richard Mbah-Emute could also do that, right? So even if, you know, DeAndre's guarding Steph Curry's strong side, there's two different options for a guy who could collapse on Draymond if he were to get to the basket on Steph, if JJ was guarding him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so DeAndre, Blake, Luke. It's like they'll probably pack the paint on those two guys. I guess we'll see on Wednesday. That's going to be a really interesting game.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably the biggest game of the season so far is Clippers-Warriors.
Yeah. Is Rockets-Warriors tonight?
Yeah, it's tonight.
That's a big one for me. I think there's a world where the Rockets beat the Warriors 140 to 135. I sort of like that strategy.
I want to live in that world. It'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, it will be fun to watch. And it was good talking to you, man. You said you had about 30 minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and let you go. This has been Jonathan Charks from The Ringer. Like I said, he knows 90% of everything there is to know about NBA basketball. Thanks for coming on, man.
Give me a solid 9%. I'll take that.
You say 9%?
Yeah, give me a solid 9%.
No,
coming in low. Undershoot. Always undersell. Always undersell.
Well, here at ABPN, we try to overdeliver. So, you know, I really appreciate you coming on. What's your Twitter handle? I normally would just say, yeah, his Twitter handle is this, but I don't even remember.
Jonathan Charks. The last name is spelled TJARKS.
Yeah. And, hey, we're going to have to talk about that Clippers-Warriors game, potentially. So I'll have to have you back on here pretty soon.
All right, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Have a good one.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Jonathan. It was good getting your insight and some of that stuff.
All right. Yeah, had a good time. Appreciate it.
I'll talk to you later.
All right, cool. See ya.